City have another chance.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. This is Gavin here with Chase and Adam today to record about a couple different topics. One, that NYCFC loss 5-0, of course, to record about the DeVos family and a little bit of DK talk after the Gold Cup semifinal just finished today, tonight, with a USA coming away with a 1-0 win over Qatar. First and foremost, though, we have to introduce you guys. Chase, how you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing good. I just saw Giassi's art as duty does best, and that's forcing the USMNT to get victories.
Yes, of course. And Adam, how about yourself?
All right, I am drinking some fantastic Italian mineral sparkling water.
Okay.
So I was in Aldi and I saw the tall ass green bottle and it was like $1.50. So I'm like, I'm curious enough. I like sparkling water. Nothing wrong with it. It's like nothing special. It's bubbly water, but it's like, it's refreshing.
Pretty good.
I'm good.
Yeah, the thing that makes me curious is the fact that you called it Aldi and not Aldi. But, you know, that's just...
I feel like it's a tomato-tomato type thing.
No, it's Aldi. No one calls it Aldi.
I think Aldi's for the Brits.
For what?
I don't know.
The British folk.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, call up Daniel, see what he says.
I think he's pretty busy right now. That's why he's not on the pod. All right, so
he has time for this.
Yeah, seriously. First and foremost, let's get some of the game talk out of the way before we do a deeper discussion on the DeVos family being with the Wilf family as well as our new owner, since you guys know a little bit more about it than Daniel and I did when we did our last podcast together. So first and foremost, NYCFC 5-0 loss. I'm going to be straight up with you guys. I did not catch a chance to watch the game. I was at work. I watched the highlights. I wish I didn't watch the highlights, which makes me feel even worse for you guys who did watch the entire game. So, Adam, I'm going to start off with you. Give me your 1,000-foot view of the game and any takeaways you had from it.
Well, I'm glad it was in New York and I didn't convince myself to go because it was a shit show. And I would not have wanted to sit through that in Orlando heat for 90 minutes because it would have been the same at our place. Stadium be damned, whatever. Maybe we would have lost 3-0 instead of 5-0, but same thing. And when you look at the lineups, NYCFC had a full-strength lineup pretty much, minus James Sands. But other than that, they had a pretty full-strength lineup. And we did not. NYCFC is a good team. They pepper you with shots. They take advantage of their possession. They know how to play out of the back, especially with the midfield we played, where we have, Prayer is a first choice midfielder, but two other midfielders who are not first choice midfielders. We were getting our asses kicked in midfield, you know, asses kicked on defense. Took a bunch of players off the half. Played the kids. Didn't work there either. Nothing worked. No, team didn't have a ton of chemistry. The lone bright spot, I'll say, I turned this off at like 70. It was 3-0 when I turned it off. The lone bright spot I saw was Emmanuel Mas. Looked like a quality individual player. He just had no idea what anyone else was doing around him because he's been with the team like 2 days. So that is what I think of it. It's one of those burn the tapes, move on, get some guys healthy, get some guys back from international duty. That's really good. What's going to fix this? And I don't know if I'm very nervous for the Atlanta game tomorrow. I'll say that.
So. Yeah, definitely a resounding defeat that we went through. Chase, I don't want to spend too much time on the game, but I do want to just talk about this topic real quickly. Going into the match, NYCFC were 5 points behind us with 2 games in hand. Now they are 2 points behind us with 1 game in hand after they beat us. Any issue with the fact that Oscar Pereja went so weak against a team who, if they beat us and then beat another team, they jump over us in the standings? Or do you think we were just kind of forced into it with the situation we were in?
I don't know. I would be interested to hear kind of the, not injury status, but fitness status of a lot of the players that sat out. Because I'll have to look at, I think they already put out the, you know, injury list, if you will. Like, you know, who's questionable, who's out for next game. I would like to look at that.
It's Urso questionable, Pato questionable, Mendez out. And who else is questionable? Somebody else. And then we have our two internationals as well.
Probably Moutinho.
I think Moutinho, yeah, I think you're right, is questionable. And everybody else is off of the report.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of talked about this earlier, like having to manage like a player like Nani or something like that. I'm interested to see what's up with this Chris Mueller situation. It maybe is looking more and more like it might be, you know, he might be gone, honestly. Maybe a little bit earlier than we would like to see. I'm not too sure, though. I'm thinking a lot of this was out of the hands of Papu, because obviously we are, like, in a bit of an injury crisis, and particularly at the striker position. You know, we have Pato injured and two guys out internationally await the Gold Cup, and that's pretty much all that we have right there at that position, especially because, like, Derek Dotson has been loaned out and things like that, which I'm not going to say looks regrettable, but he definitely, I think, maybe could have at least seen some minutes off the bench if he was here. I don't know. I could be mistaken on that, but I don't know. To answer your question, I definitely think a little bit of the blame falls on him, but I just think that we probably had to manage Nani, and there are some things out of his control, and we had to go heavily rotated, but I don't know. I would have liked to see a little bit more of a quality squad. I think that, really, aside from our back line, everybody was either not first choice or playing out of position, except for maybe Vanderwater. So it was just shitty all around, man. Like, it's something, like Adam said, that has me a little bit worried about tomorrow. I'm excited to maybe see if Juan could get a start, if Moss could maybe play again as well, depending on his fitness, and he's had a little bit more time with the team. But yeah, it's gonna be tough until maybe the international break is over, or we start getting some of these injuries back.
Yeah, definitely something that when I was looking at the game, when I was kind of looking into it and previewing it, I was just thinking to myself, like, you know, they are only 5 points behind us, two games in hand. Like, they could definitely catch up on us if they win here, and then they could possibly leapfrog us with another win. Now, their next game is home against Columbus, but still, you know, anytime they're at home, you kind of favor them. So it's just something that I was thinking to myself, like, I really hope we don't kind of throw this, as Poppy will do sometimes. And I'm not saying he threw it, but like on purpose, but also when you're taking Vanderwater off at halftime for Robin Jansen, when it's a 1-0 scoreline, that's kind of weird to me.
The reason he did that was because Vanderwater was shit in the first half.
So you take him off for a center back?
Yeah,
I think that's a stupid reason.
Well, no, the reason he did it was Vanderwater was shit, wasn't tracking back on defense. So what he did was he basically moved to a three back, took Vanderwater off, and relied on Juan to get width on that right side by himself.
I think
it made a little bit of sense. That one did
not for me. No,
he only had one attacking sub on the bench, which was David Loera, who he clearly doesn't trust. So he was thinking, what can I do to change up our attack without bringing on David Loera? And that was it.
If Vanderwater's not tracking back and that's a problem, you put Vanderwater at a floating striker Benji on the right. He was
also bad going forward.
Yeah, but if you have no attacking or defensive tap, attacking subs, I would just leave him on. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think the sub is a bit extreme. You kind of just deal with it and hope that he does something
spectacular. I'm just saying that the sub made sense.
Okay. Well, I can't really think of too much else to talk about when it comes to the game, honestly. We just had our B/C team in there. And point blank, period, whatever you want to say, we weren't good enough, and it was just the quality, really, I think. Any worries, Adam, about Galese being injured for a little bit?
All of the worries.
Yeah.
Word on the street is it's going to be 3 weeks about. Brandon Austin ain't good. He's not.
I mean, he's not Galese good, but I think he's serviceable.
He's not. He struggles too much with shots down low, which is a lot of MLS shots. He just seems to have a problem getting on the ground to make a save. His distribution isn't good. He doesn't have the chemistry with the back line that he needs to be able to play with his feet. I would honestly rather if Galese is going to... So, word on the street right now is 3 weeks. We all know Orlando City has the worst injury management of any sports team I've ever seen. So, 3 weeks, 3 years, who knows? I would honestly, if he's going to be out any longer than those 3 weeks, get an MLS veteran cheap off the street. You know, find someone who can...
Take Brian Rowe out of retirement.
Honestly, I would rather see Brian Rowe in goal than Brandon Austin.
Okay, interesting.
I would rather see Adam Grinwis in goal than Brandon Austin.
Is he back from injury?
That I can get behind.
Adam Grinwis has been training with Orlando City.
Oh, okay.
He's not signed. He's back from injury. He's not signed, but he has been training with Orlando.
Interesting. Alrighty. Yeah, Galese being out does worry me, especially because we have two massive rivalries coming up, and no matter how bad the team is a rivalry, Atlanta and Inter Miami. Going to be some interesting games coming up. We were having an interesting conversation before we started recording, and so I kind of wanted to bring that into the recording section of the pod, obviously, and that was DK coming back after international break after playing so many games. And I believe it was Adam who said that maybe we shouldn't have sent him out on loan. So let's just have that discussion real quick. And Chase, where do you stand on that?
Well, I think sending him out on loan did a lot of good for him as a player, and also for his value for us in terms of like an asset. I think that raised what we could get for him in a fee, particularly because he's just played in a league that might be more appealing to particularly English Premier League teams to have a kind of experience there. But the issue obviously with that is, you know, as we're saying right now, and actually Mike Ace Villain, I think his name is on Twitter, he made a very good point. Like, he has played almost 60 games in a very congested schedule, really never had a break. Like, when there is a club break, say an international break, he typically has been with the U.S. men's national team. I want to say maybe other than Sebastian Letka, he's one of the only players that has been at least training with the team in both the U.S.-based camps and the previous European-based camps, because, you know, he was either in America, like the Trinidad and Tobago game, which he made his debut in, he was then announced to go to Barnsley the next day. So when the U.S. were playing in Switzerland, he at least went and trained with the team, which is no break, obviously. And then, you know, he's here with the Gold Cup as well, and he was with the squad at the Nations League. So he just has not had a break really since he has started playing consistently as a professional soccer player, honestly. And I don't know if I would go as far as to say he should not have gone out on loan, but I almost think, like, not because I don't really like him as a player and not because, you know, I want him gone or anything like that, but I almost really just think that when his value is high and there's a lot of interest in him, I really just think we should have sold him, because, and this is like the benefit of hindsight and knowing all of this now, like, oh, he's a little maybe worn down, and I would love to be proven wrong and see him, you know, come back and be amongst the goals and put in some quality performances. But like, he just, regardless of the fact that he is like such a young player, I feel like he really just needs a break, and he is not going to get that for a while. And he appears to be injured right now. And we had maybe an opportunity to sell him and then try to bring in another goal scorer. And, you know, we let that pass us, but I mean, that's, like I said, the benefit of hindsight, but I don't know. I think the loan was valuable, but it took away valuable time that he could have had, you know, resting and recuperating in an off season.
Yeah, I think on the whole, obviously there's pros and cons to it, right? There's a pros and cons to everything. And if you balance the pros and cons, I think the pros outweigh the cons. But we are starting to see the effects of the loan. we are starting to see him start to slow down. I mean, when he first arrived, he is such a fast player right off the mark. I mean, and his overall speed is just really top notch. And he's just not hitting those same miles per hour anymore. He's definitely slowed down a little bit. Obviously, you know, he's going to lose some power, but not saying he's a bad player or anything. It's just your body breaks down, and this is literally his, since he's started that game against Miami, it's been nonstop for him. Or is that not true? That's not true. He did have a little bit of an off season after MLS
Cup. I mean,
after the MLS playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been like a month.
Yeah. But
even still, he was with the
Barnsley and played like half of a season for them. And then, yeah. So it's very short stoppage. So, Adam, where do you lie on this DK conversation here? Maybe not so much of, oh, it's black or white, like we shouldn't have sent him out on loan. But what are your thoughts here?
No, not. I don't think it's that black or white. Like, I think either decision is defensible no matter which one they made, keeping him or sending him out on loan. Clearly, they chose to send him out on loan. I think with the benefit of hindsight, maybe keeping him would have been the better idea had they – and it's funny. We like they said short-term loan, he's coming back. Don't worry, we'll have DK for the season. And we all thought that was just club speak BS. Turns out they weren't lying. So assuming they intended to have him play for Orlando City this year the whole time, sending him to play for Barnsley for half the season in an incredibly physical league with what is an incredibly physically demanding style of play for DK, given that he was basically asked to create their entire offense, both through running with the ball, hold up play, and by looking for a ton of service. So he had to constantly be making runs. He got worn down before our season even started. Recovery time is extremely important for professional athletes. Having a full off season does wonders for the body and giving him a chance to rebuild, recover from all those little injuries that don't get mentioned. And he didn't really have that. So, and they also knew that DK was going to have chances in the U.S. men's national team. I don't know why I couldn't get that out. But they probably didn't know that he probably wouldn't have made the Nations League team if, I know TNT was a friendly, but still, he wouldn't have made that camp if he hadn't gone to Barnsley. But they had to know he was going to be on the Gold Cup team, especially if he played like he did at Barnsley for us at the beginning of the season. He would have easily been on the Gold Cup team. They knew he was going to have international duty and he was going to play more there. He was going to have to travel and come back to the U.S. That's ended up being where he's gotten this latest injuries, playing for the national team. I'm just saying they knowing that they wanted him to come back and play striker for us in the second half of the season, they knowingly basically had him play a full season with more than a full season's worth of travel before he's going to do that. And that was a dumb move if you want to win soccer games. If they wanted to increase his value and sell him, then yeah, probably the loan was the right move. But because they didn't do that, then that hurt his ability to win us games now more than it helped it.
Okay. Yeah. Chase, do you have any rebuttal to that? Or addition
more,
to that?
More like an agreeance. I definitely think that is correct. Like, if we are going to send him out on loan, I think that you then just have to sell him because... And I think that this should have been something that we were aware of because, you know, the Gold Cup... It's very feasible. Like, maybe we wouldn't have known for sure if what the plans were if we were bringing a complete first team or a more American-based team, but I don't necessarily think that matters. Like, I think there's a good chance that he goes either way. Maybe they wouldn't have known that in January, but it's just if we had him out on loan, it's like, come on, man. Like, he, despite the fact that he's 21 years old, like, you can't play
highly competitive soccer, particularly as a target forward who gets knocked down quite a lot for over a year and a half without more than a month of a break. I looked it up. Like, he headed out to Barnsley, I think made his debut January 20th. And the New England Revolution game, where we got knocked out in the playoffs, was November 29th. So it was almost 2 months, but that's still not nearly enough. So I think Adam is honestly pretty spot on right there. Like, if we sent him out on loan, it may have just been the best business decision all along to try and get him out. But, you know, if we wanted him to continue playing here, he should have stayed. I don't know. I'm just repeating what he said at this point. But, yeah, I think that he's quite correct.
All right. Well, Chase, I'm going to stick with you here. Any thoughts on the Gold Cup game before we move on into our big discussion here? You watched it, right?
Yes, I did. Okay. Are you asking thoughts on Daryl Dike or just
US the game in general for our USMNT fans? Why not?
Yeah. Well, first, looking specifically at Daryl Dike, I do think that he had a pretty rough game, if I'm being honest. His movement was quite passive, and he just, I don't know, he just didn't really get involved, which honestly, even in his better games, he doesn't necessarily have too many touches. He just, you know, finds ways to make a difference. I guess that's a terrible, I don't know, analysis, but you know what I'm saying. But as a whole, I think the first half was pretty dire. I think the second half was quite poor, or quite better, a lot better. I think a lot of the substitutions, which is maybe something that's a little uncharacteristic for Greg Berhalter, worked out pretty well. And, you know, like I said, Giassi Zardes, as much hate as he gets, he's a pretty consistent goal scorer for club level, and he's been nothing but solid, I think, for the U.S. men's national team. Like, he is a very clearly limited player, but he just has a knack for picking up goals, and he was tracking back a lot. It was really important, particularly in, like, when Qatar was going forward for their last attack. Like, he came back and he broke up play, and that kind of sealed it. Matt Turner as well. Like, that's going to be another talking point from this game. Matt Turner is arguably the number one for the U.S. men's national team. Like, that's no hate to Zach Steffen or even Ethan Horvath, but I don't know, Matt Turner, of the three, he's limited in playing the ball with his feet, but he is a phenomenal shot stopper in terms of his reflexes and coming out and being able to make himself big. He played great. James Sands is not a back four center back. Miles Robinson, I think, should be in the 23. Same with Kellen Acosta. But yeah, first half bad, second half pretty good. Giassi Zardes is inevitable. And I'm looking forward to, you know, kind of catching up a bit on this Canada-Mexico game, because Tesho Akindele is starting up top against a relatively full-strength Mexican team. So it's going to be quite a ride.
Man, I really, really like that recap. The main thing that I noticed from this game that really bothered me with USMNT is I didn't see a lot of third man runs into the box, or just late third man runs in general, until late on. And I'm not saying Zardes' run was a third man run. That was just a regular run to the front post. And obviously that was kind of a chaotic sequence, but usually those third man runs, that just provides that extra player in the box, and they usually don't get caught or don't get covered because they come in so late. And there were a lot of spaces for that, and I wish Berhalter kind of would have noticed that and would have gone a little bit more aggressive there, with sending, you know, maybe that the central midfielder or the left back in or the right back in on the far side and tell him, hey, go push on into the box and be that third man, and we can probably get one or two goals here, because that space was there, and they just weren't taking advantage of it. Obviously, in the end, his timidness worked out. They did not concede. They got a clean sheet, and they went on to win the game 1-0. So it's going to be an interesting final against Canada or Mexico, and either way, it's going to be a pretty good game. Okay, Adam, the floor is yours. We are going to dive into the Wilf family, the DeVos family. Get out your notes, get out your anger notes. And I'm sure you have some somewhere, and please do enlighten me about the situation notes. And you, me and Chase are gonna have a decent conversation about this, so go ahead, floor is yours.
Okay, so the Wilfs remind me of the DeVos family in a lot of bad ways. So we know that the Wolves also own the Minnesota Vikings. And Vikings fans are generally ambivalent to slightly negative about the Wolves, in that they provide the necessary money, but in the NFL it doesn't really matter because of the cap. And they generally don't mess with the team that much. And they seem accepting of mediocrity. They've had several coaches that have in Minnesota that have lasted through not providing great results, but kind of not sucking terribly enough to get fired. Both GMs and coaches have kind of, been okay. If you can just make the playoffs once every few years, you're kind of safe. And that seems to be the attitude that they run that organization with. Similar to the DeVos family, who can't seem to get a thing right with the Magic and don't really seem to care about it either. So while the Vikings aren't quite as poorly run as the Magic, they're still not known as a particularly well-run organization in the NFL, when particularly compared to organizations like the Ravens, the Chiefs, the Patriots. They are not anywhere near that tier. So that's the sports where they remind me. And honestly, this comparison, when I read that they had done a deal with the DeVos family to make them minority owners and have an ownership stake and a partnership between the Magic and Orlando City, it didn't strike me right away. The more I thought about it, the more it just disturbed me. So if you are not familiar with the company Amway, it's basically a giant legal pyramid scheme that isn't a pyramid scheme based on like some sort of technicality, but it preys on economically vulnerable people and basically makes the people at the top a lot of money, while I think about 95% of Amway employees, and I'm doing heavy, heavy air quotes, they call them, I think, independent business owners. It's a fucking scam. But about 95% of them do not end up turning a profit on their quote unquote independent business. Amway is a giant scam, and the DeVos family has been the on the losing side of multiple lawsuits, and had to pay back a bunch of money to people that they scammed. Because even though technically their entire company is not a pyramid scheme, lots of aspects of it are, and they can't control everything, and so all that. So Ziggy Wilf, who is a real estate mogul, that's where he got his money. By the way, they're both families are worth about $5 billion. Ziggy Wilf I'm just going to read the Wikipedia entry. In August 2013, Wilf, talking about Ziggy, along with his brother Mark Wilf and Coven, and cousin, what's his cousin's name? Leonard, were found liable by a New Jersey court for breaking civil state racketeering laws and keeping separate accounting books to fleece former business partners of shared revenue. That racketeering. That's like old-timey, like Italian mafia, Al Capone, like criminal, like gang shit. They were treating business like organized crime. And they got convicted in court of that. I mean, not criminally, but they lost in court on racketeering charges. That they are not good people. They are not honest businessmen. That you are not coming from a place of good morals here when you make your money. Compared to Flavio, who I believe basically hit it big on, was it like an education package software thing?
I think it was like teaching like a way to learn English, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, something like that. So Flavio found a company, had a good product, hit it big. That's how he got his money. These guys are not like Flavio. These are old money, big money, shady backroom deals type of shit here. So there's that similarity. And they just don't give a shit about us. I mean, really, they come in, they immediately partner with the DeVos family. On the first day that they take over, it's announced, oh, the Wilfs and the DeVos family, which we had no idea about, are now the owners of Orlando City. So they come in and they immediately do that. And then they fire Alex Leitao. And I know they say it was a mutual decision. He stepped down. Bull fucking shit. Did Alex Leitao sit down? If he actually wanted to leave, he would have left the club. He's still with the club as a quote unquote advisory role. I guess so he can hang out with Muzy and Ricardo and Poppy. But it was someone who had done an incredible job the past 2 years. And really before that, because honestly, the player personnel decisions, that wasn't on him. I mean, yes, he didn't hire the best people. But, you know, once those people were in place, they made the bad personnel decisions. All Leitao did was manage the money. And we did get to spend a fair amount of money compared to our limited resources, especially MLS bucks. But in the last 2 years, Leitao has been instrumental in keeping Orlando City economically viable through the pandemic by renting out the stadium a ton to generate revenue where our owner can't just write a blank check, for working very effectively with Muzy and Ricardo to bring in the right players and get them in compliant with roster rules, getting visas and stuff like that. He's done an incredible job. And to just come in and ignore that and not for nothing, Orlando is a very heavy or very significant Brazilian population and Brazilian connection. And Leitao was our connection there. Flavio was mostly an absentee owner, lived in Brazil. By the way, speaking of another comparison, the DeVos family is from Michigan. The Will family is from Minnesota. So they are not Southeastern people, even not let alone Floridians. But anyway, Flavio was a mostly absentee owner. The connection there was Leitao. And I know Flavio probably hired Leitao to do that, but he was very good at it. And having a non-white person in that role, especially someone of Latin American background and heritage, it is huge in not only connecting with the soccer world, which MLS is extremely connected with that young South American talent, which having Leitao in that driver's seat helped, but just the identity of a lot of people in Florida. Florida is a melting pot with lots of Latin American people of many different backgrounds, and replacing Alex Leitao with, you know, probably a white guy in a suit is just not a great look there. And it's not someone that's going to understand our community that well, particularly the non-white part of our community. So there's that. And just, he was doing a good job, and they came in and they completely ignored that this system is working. The fans like this system. The people that have been in this system longer than we have seem to like it. And we're just going to come in and we're going to tear it up. We're going to fire the CEO. And I get that you own it now, whatever that means in MLS, because you paid a bunch of money. Now it's yours and you want your guy. That's fucking bullshit. You know, meritocracy means nothing. Apparently you just want your guy. And I don't like that way of doing business at all. So that's a lot.
We haven't gotten a replacement for him, right?
No, I assume that'll be announced soon enough, but. And they probably are doing a lot of that work themselves right now and probably have someone in the background already picked.
Yeah, probably. Chase, what were your initial thoughts when you heard the news? Any reaction to Adam's points there? All that stuff.
Yeah. I've always thought that owners are like my least favorite part of sports. The more that we have to talk about them, I think is a detriment to sporting conversation and almost like sports in general, because as much as, you know, like they own the team, I almost think in a way like they're very disconnected from it, you know, like I'm realizing now, like I appreciate Flavio because, you know, people were criticizing him for not spending enough, which is a very valid criticism, but I almost appreciate it more often when just you don't really have to be too concerned about the owners and you could just worry about like, oh, who is this team going to be able to sign? And if you have like a good understanding of your price range and stuff, and you're just interested in the on the field part of sports, as well as the players themselves and how they act, I like that more than having to worry about, like, as Adam is saying, a billionaire suit, which realistically probably all of them have obtained their money in some relatively immoral way. I feel like that's kind of partially just the way about it. Like, I just don't really want to worry about those people, if I'm being completely honest. And I think it's a bit of a detriment that, especially with the DeVos family, who already has such a poor relationship with the people of Orlando, that this is probably now, rightfully so, going to be a talking point for a while. And that's something that I'm not particularly too happy about. And it's just disappointing because, you know, for all of his financial deficiencies, I think people, especially now that we are moving in the correct direction and we seem to have a pretty good business model set up, people viewed Fabio and obviously the people that he and Alex Ateo have put in, I don't want to say positions of power, but, you know, in kind of these executive roles very favorably and for very good reason. They're doing quite good work. And yeah, Alex Ateo, I think for a significant portion of his career, maybe didn't get his appointments 100% correct, but I think that he got these appointments that he's done now immensely right, whether it's Muzy or, you know, Ricardo Moreira or Bazan or, you know, Pareja, which, you know, I'm not sure if more of that was Muzy or if more of that was Letal, but I'm sure he was partially involved in that. And he was a part of maybe the culture and the energy going on around the club. It's frustrating that he's gone now, because I think that we're doing a lot of things right, and a lot of that is now up in the air as to whether or not we're gonna, you know, what's the damn name of the guy that we used to have that's with Inter Miami now? I don't know if we're gonna
appoint Paul McDonough.
Yeah, Paul McDonough. I don't know if we're gonna appoint somebody like that. Like Adam said, I think that we really benefited by not just having people who are connected to South American football and understand, like, you know, the culture of Latin American individuals, not as a whole. You know, there's obviously much differences that I, you know, there's much cultural differences, but like they understand it more than Adam, like Adam put it, just like some white guy in a suit that's probably disconnected from the community more so than these people would be. It's disappointing to see him go. If he was fired, you know, right after James O'Connor got fired, you know, like kind of in one of those eras, I think I would have been more okay with it. But this just seems like the wrong decision right now, right off the bat. And, you know, I don't want to talk about
a lot of wrong decisions right off the bat.
Yeah. Yeah. Particularly, you know, bringing in the DeVos family, getting rid of one of the more favorably viewed executives of the team, who's really just done a lot of good in the past year, I would say, especially in a sporting sense. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to talk about it too much more. I definitely don't have as strong opinions and as Adam does, and a lot of that admittedly will come from ignorance. Like, I know that the DeVos family are viewed favorably, and I have a familiarity and understanding of why, but not maybe as much as Adam does. And I didn't know who the Wolf family were until they signed us, but yeah, just reiterating, it's when you have to really start talking about the owners and saying, oh, they don't know what they're doing, and have to worry about what they are doing consistently, I think that sucks a lot of the joy out of the sport. And I don't know. I hope we're not in for that a lot more. I hope it doesn't spell the end of Muzy as well here and our entire coaching staff that seemed to be really close with Alex Ateo and, you know, here because of him.
Yeah. So where I was about to go is, first of all, I would say I'm never going to say that our owners don't know what they're doing, because they know exactly what they're doing, and they've shown that to us already. They know the DeVos family is not well-liked here. They did their research. That's why they did not leak that news until they had already bought us, or else they would have had bad fan sentiment since before they purchased it. So now they own us, so now it's just bad fan sentiment, but they already own us, so there's nothing we can really protest or do other than say, we don't like y'all right now. So there's that. There's also the fact that they are, whether they fired Letao or Letao and them had a disagreement on how to move forward with things, and then he stepped down because he didn't like the fact that he had new owners. Like, that definitely could have happened. I don't think it's 100% that he got fired, but either way, I do think they know what they're doing, and I am worried about the future of the club because there is a very, very, very good culture within the team right now in terms of the players. They all seem to have like a pretty close bond. They all seem to enjoy each other's presence. It's not like in 2018 where there was a bunch of cliques and there was a lot of fighting between squad members in the background. So there's that going for us. We obviously have Oscar Pereja, who has obviously been our best coach in the MLS ever. He's growing something big, and we were finally starting to have some stability. I mean, how long have we been asking for stability as a club since we've joined MLS? I mean, it's ridiculous. It was just coach after coach after coach. We lost Paul McDonough. We lost Nicky Budalic. So we're doing rebuilds here and there. And then we finally are into our second year of a consistent group. No one's moving. No one's leaving. We've got good things going. We all knew that Flavio wanted in the background to probably sell the club. And then he did it at probably one of the worst possible times. I think if he would have waited, maybe, you know, a couple more years, that would have helped us in a sporting sense. But on a business, in terms of business, now that we're one of the better teams in MLS, it's the perfect time for him to sell at peak value. That's what you do as a businessman. And at the end of the day, that's what these owners are. They are businessmen, and they're going to run us like a business. I don't know if they're going to invest. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. There was rumors that they are going to. And so maybe, you know, they're going to go all out and show their intent. But based on what Adam's saying, based on what they're showing us, they're just, to me, it's telling me that they're running this like a business, and fair play to them. But we might suffer because of that. So it's definitely going to be an interesting next couple of months to see what happens with behind the scenes, I should say, not with the team, but behind the scenes. And I am worried. I am pretty worried, but I do know the DeVos family aren't well liked. I don't really know more than that. Obviously, Adam's spelled that out for us. Adam, what else you got for me here? Anything else on this topic?
Well, I'm basically terrified that we're going to turn into the Magic. And not even necessarily with the...
So even though they're minority owners, like they're not the majority owners, you think that's a possibility?
No, I don't think it's because of the DeVos family. I think it's because of the Wolf family. Mm. I think that they're people who had no idea about anything about this community that just came in with a bunch of money and bought something because they wanted a soccer team. And this is not the first time that they've attempted to break into MLS ownership. And I don't think they give a shit about us. And I think that the Magic core that we had in place is going to be disrupted by them. And they're not going to replace it with people that understand how important it is, the role that Orlando City plays in our community. And it's a role the Magic don't play. Orlando City does a lot of really great philanthropy, particularly in like Orlando proper and around the entire Orlando metropolitan area. But it's work that really makes a difference, particularly the Orlando City Foundation. And I don't want to start any rumors or anything. And I am not saying this with any sureness, whatever. Do not take this as fact. But who's to say that Kay Rollins is going to last much longer at this rate, particularly with now new owners that she doesn't know coming in, and how much is the foundation going to be connected with the rest of the club, and how much is that going to affect the culture of the team, and all that really important stuff that has nothing to do with the product on the pitch. And I just think that we might have lost a lot of that based on how little they seem to care about what we think when they first come in. Why should we believe it's going to get any better? Why should we believe, you know, after years of making money, the Wolves are going to be like, finally, oh, we should ask the supporters what they think. That's not going to happen. And so because they didn't do it when they came in, they're not going to do it at any point in the future. And that makes me really sad.
Yeah.
So Wolf's out.
What are we, like, a month in and it's Wolf out already? I mean, yeah, I definitely understand. Let's just say they invest in the team, show that they care. They don't move Oscar Pereja on and the rest of the team, and they look like they at least give a shit about us. With the negativity around the DeVos thing, would you change your tune, Adam? And then I'll let Chase answer that as well.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I think that here's the difference morally between the two. The Wolves, okay, it's business, whatever, white collar crime. DeVos family, in terms of the things that they believe and have supported, things like a lot of anti-LGBT discrimination, in terms of organizations that they have started and given a bunch of money to that lobby for things outlawing gay marriage, outlawing visitation rights for partners in same-sex couples, making it really hard for same-sex couples to adopt, stuff like that. That's what the DeVos family is about. Not even getting to the fact that Betsy DeVos is one of them. They are evil people. They have no redemption in my eyes. I would rather they never set foot in our city again. That being said, the Wolves don't have quite that track record, which makes them redeemable to me. So yes, if all those things happen that you say, like the foundation and all the work Orlando City does in the community continues to be a big part of the team, if, you know, if they keep the right people for the product on the pitch in place while they are still performing, sure, I could change my tune on the Wolves. I just think that they have started out in pretty much the worst way possible.
Yep. I agree with that. I think they have really come with a really bad start here. Chase, what say you on that kind of scenario?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, there was one guy who brought out like a DeVos out sign to the previous game, and I think that got snuffed out. But I think it's like, it's realistic that at least with the DeVos's, I think if there was enough fan sentiment to say, like, we do not want these people to be a part of our club, we want them out, they don't represent, I mean, especially with all these things that Adam is saying, you know, for a club based in Orlando, which obviously has a large LGBTQ+ community, as well as has a lot of historical events, for better or worse. I don't even want to say historical. Like, I'm not trying to outright say what I'm saying, but I think a lot of people know what I allude to. Mm-hmm. To have people who advocate against it is not a good look. It's very bad. And I think that if there is enough fan sentiment to get them out, I wouldn't be surprised, if particularly because they are really, I don't even know what percent of the club they probably own, and they're in an advisory role, if anything. I almost think it's more just their name is connected to it than they're going to have like severe like control of the club. But even just having the name connected to it is not a good thing in a lot of supporters' eyes, rightfully so, like myself included. And I think that it could be something that if there are enough people showing negatively about, and even if something like a protest or whatever like that, like we've seen things like that happen in English soccer, I think that people can have, you know, more power than they might initially think, or maybe they're well aware of it and they just need to get out and do it. Like, and I could take that advice as well. But yeah, it's just, I don't want to speculate on like who might get fired, who might this, that, or the other, who might leave the club, because I'm not sure. But yeah, I think it hasn't been great in the first month. I've seen a lot of backlash for it. I think the best thing that they could have done is just come in, kept pretty much the exact same infrastructure, and just funded it a lot more. And I think even from a business sense, I think that that would have worked pretty well. But yeah, it just sucks when you have to be concerned about who owns your team. Like, honest to God, like, I didn't know what Flavio did until like 30 minutes ago. Like, I Google searched that, and you could call me a bad fan, but like, I don't know. I just don't care about worrying about owners in sports. Like, you know, I'm a Marlins fan, and we had Jeffrey Loria for quite some time. I'm a Magic fan, and we've had the DeVos family. And there's just been such a rabid sentiment against them. Probably, well, for Jeffrey Loria, I'm honestly a little bit less familiar, but like probably for valid reasons for him, and definitely valid reasons against the DeVos family. And it just sucks that like Orlando City, the team that I outright like 100% care for, like, this is probably going to be a topic of conversation. And rightfully so. Like, I'm not frustrated that people are talking about it. I think that there are valid reasons to do so, but it sucks that that's the way it's turning out. I don't know. It's poor. And I think it was definitely a bad decision, particularly to bring the DeVos family in, and the Wolves haven't got off on a great foot as well. Adam definitely seems like he knows a lot more than I, but yeah, it's not too encouraging. And I hope it doesn't, you know, I hope we don't start seeing, you know, Muzi or whomever step away just because, you know, Letao was pivotal in bringing him in. It's, I don't know. There's a possibility that things could go very wrong. And I hope that they don't, obviously, like any fan. So we'll see. It's going to be, I don't know if interesting is the right word, but there's going to be a lot of possibilities of things that could happen.
Yep. For me, just kind of echoing all that, they've got off on a bad start. They have history, the DeVos family, at least. The Wolf family kind of snuck them in there, and that just kind of leaves a sour taste of distrust in my mouth, and it's going to take a lot to get it out. But yeah, I think that just about covers it. If we got nothing else really going on around the club, we got a big game tomorrow. Against Atlanta. I will be there. I will be attending. It will be my first game of the season that I'll be at. So I'm excited. Ooh, for me that. Oh, you'll be there?
Yes.
I got some of the club access tickets.
Ooh.
Where are you sitting?
Let's see. Oh, wall.
Wall. You don't stay. Okay. Fair enough. Where are you placed? we'll have to meet up then. Wall. We'll definitely have to meet up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Alrighty. Well, with that, exciting times ahead. Hopefully we beat them. Any thoughts on the game, Chase, Adam?
I scared.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, a little bit worried. Atlanta are a little bit depleted as well, with some guys out on international duty, and they just haven't been playing well. I'm a big believer that in any sport, though, like, once you get out a manager that was maybe contributing to a toxic team environment, you're often going to see a bit of a bump. And I'm extra worried that we might be the benefactor of that, or, you know, the one who takes that on the chin. But I don't know. I don't want to approach any game overly negative. Just hope for the best and see what happens, I guess.
Yeah. It's gonna be...
The positive here is that hopefully Nani Mueller will start this game. So we should see at least some more offense, if not better defense.
Yeah. Definitely hoping for that. I do not need to be 5-0 losers at home to Atlanta. That'd be bad. Alrighty, well, that is it for today. Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation we had. If you did, please obviously continue to listen and let us know. We'd really appreciate it. Adam, where can our listeners find you at?
You can find me at Kosher Taco Truck on Twitter and Instagram.
You can also find him at Cappy's Truck. He is starting food truck. Yes. Kind of breaking news there for the Cappy's franchise, or, you know, the franchise, but, you know, the Cappy's.
It's a club, sir.
Yeah. The Cappy's business. And Chase, where can our listeners find you at?
You can find me on Twitter at VamosOCSC. And maybe the Cappy's food truck as a visitor. Come on, Adam. Are you going to give me a little bit of a free sub here and there?
I already have.
Again. Listen.
Again. I need to re-up my sponsorship, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's your 6 month payment.
Alrighty, boys. Let's go ahead and get out of here. You guys have a good rest of your night. Thanks for hopping on with me. Thanks for listening, everyone. Y'all have a good one.
Yeah, you as well. Yo.
City have another chance.